Hey everybody, what you're about to hear is a free preview of a podcast on our $5 exclusive episodes tier at patreon.com/retronauts. And if you want to hear the whole thing, please go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up at the $5 exclusive episodes tier. Once you do that, you'll get access to all of our previous exclusive episodes and our future ones as well, as long as you remain a patron, and our exclusive episodes will launch every other Friday. Again, that is the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts, and I'll let you get to this free preview of one of our exclusive episodes.
Why don't we talk about Super Metroid? Yeah. So we talked about a lot of stuff. We were kind of all over the place in the previous episode. But in terms of the notes that I laid out, which are 14 pages long, we only got to page, what, 3? My God.
Gracious.
So with this episode, we're going to, assuming we ever actually talk about Super Metroid, take a more granular approach and more structured approach and talk about specific game components and, one, how they work or don't work in some cases, maybe, I don't know, and also just how those ideas have gone on to affect and influence other games in subsequent years. How does that sound? It sounds great, right?
You know what? That absolutely. Absolutely fantastic, Jeremy. I'm really
Would you say it sounds cracking?
Yeah, cracking.
More corking.
It sounds absolutely, yeah. It sounds like a whizzer
wow.
thing to do.
Sweet. Yeah. Okay, phenomenal. This is like Super Metroid was designed by the British. All right, so we're going to begin with backtracking. That is a thing you do in Super Metroid. And we talked about this a little bit in the previous episode, or maybe a lot, about how basically the game requires you to do a certain amount of backtracking, but it's not just like setting you loose to explore a vast map that you've already covered in search of one or two little tiny objects. It's very good about, one, about kind of limiting the amount of backtracking you can do until it's ready to take off the training wheels in very subtle ways. And two, it's really good about kind of giving you little hints of things that might intrigue you and make you say, oh, I need to go back to that. Those are two really strong design components of Super Metroid. And, you know, it's not the game that invented those concepts, but, you know, I think back to the nonlinear games on NES and other 8-bit systems that I've played, and you just don't really see that kind of breadcrumb trail approach. It really, you know, the idea of, like, here is a ledge that is just out of reach. You can't jump up there no matter how hard you try. You didn't really see a lot of that in games, unless it was more like, you know, like a linear action game where the idea was, oh, maybe you take a different path through the stage this time, but, you know, there's no sense of backtracking because you complete the stage and you're done, so you just need to figure out how to get to that other part. Like, you know, Super Mario Land is a good example of that.
Mm. Yeah.
Where you have, you know, kind of like the obvious course through each stage, but then a lot of times you'll see, you know, coins hidden beneath the floor and there's no way to get there. You know, or coins way up above in the ceiling or something. And it's just not physically possible for Mario to get there no matter how hard you try. And so it sticks with you and it intrigues you. And you say, you know, I want to get those coins because Mario is a greedy little bastard and he needs all of his coins. And you have to figure out how to get them, which usually involves going down a pipe or something at some point. Mm. But it's that same principle applied to Super Metroid and its nonlinear world, you know, the kind of open, non-goal-based style of map design.
Yeah.
And it's very, very enticing and effective because you see stuff and you're like, God dang, why can't I get that E-tank? I want it now, but I can't have it.
It's also a confidence that none of the other Metroid games have matched. Like every single other one that I can think of has some measure of, this is where you need to go next. Infusion, the absolute direct hand-holding.
Yeah.
And Zero Mission, the Chozo statues that will show you your next destination. I mean, yes, you are still exploring to find out how to get there, but it's really not, in my opinion, on the same level. It's just so much more confident in Super Metroid. They know they've made this world that, while it has its intricacies and it's like, what's the word? It's traps and it's like tricks. It's still navigable and they know that it is. And I dig that a lot. I appreciate the confidence of that coming out of the gate, just knowing that your map is that good, basically.
We talked a lot about the map last episode, a lot about the map. And we all agree, you know, map good. But in praising Super Metroid's map, we indeed, in fact, gave it too much credit because there is, in fact, no doors on the Super Metroid map. We all remember it because... We think, you know what it is? We're thinking of Fusion. Starting with Fusion,
there's
the
map doors everywhere on the map, fight. There's doors everywhere.
I mean,
what
the little map,
about?
The map, that, like the mini map thing, not the actual game.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you'd gone crazy.
I mean, like, the geometry base, just like, you know, simple. It has the lines, it shows all the rooms connecting.
Sorry.
It has that nice border thing that Jeremy talked about, where it's like, if you don't fill out the room all the way, you won't see the border. But ultimately, these blocks all just fit together, and there is no indication of doorways at all. So, but Fusion has doors. Symphony Knight has little holes to show where doorways are.
Yeah.
But Super Metroid, no holes.
No holes for Super Metroid. How does it? Never mind.
Don't the lines in each at the end of each block indicate doors? Given that there's not going to be anything else there, I mean, it's all doors. You only travel through doors or gaps. So. Don't the white lines that mark each side of each map piece essentially mark the doors? Or do you mean like the color specifically of what door you're going to be encountering? Let's make the whole contest. The whole podcast should be this argument, I think.
Should be this door.
I'll explain. Every room, you know, every room in Metroid has a sort of defined outline to it. So if two rooms connect to each other and they only connect once, then you can judge, oh, this must be a doorway. But if the rooms don't connect at all, it looks the same on the map. So you might go somewhere, it's like, oh, this connects to the next room, right? And you get there, and it's like, oh, no, there's no door. You can't.
Okay, yeah,
there's some place like that I believe, Ridley's Lair, where it looks like, you look at the map and you're like, oh, cool, this is, you know, like a passage. And then you get there, and no, it's actually just two dead ends that butt up against each other, and there is actually no way to get through.
Yes, MOP did have some.
And then you waste time, and you don't get the best ending. And Samus is sad because she doesn't get to wear her swimsuit and go swimming.
Aww, that's what I mean.
Samus.